District Attorney Scott McNamara is in the studio. Scott, good morning. Thank you for showing up, by the way. I know it's nice out, and you'd rather be out doing something in the sunshine, maybe having a cup of coffee outside. But thank you for coming in.
No problem.
And Mother's Day is this weekend.
Yes,
I'm polling everybody. What did you do?
What did I do?
What's your plans? Anything. What's your plans for Mother's Day?
Well, actually, I'm leaving for New Jersey, so I can't spend Mother's Day with my mother and my wife as much as I should, but...
That's probably a good present. That's why I asked Maria, I asked my fiance, I go, what do you want for Mother's Day? She goes, for you to leave the house.
I never thought of it.
Yeah, she goes, take the baby and get out of here for a whole day. I said, done. But I'm still trying to come up with something for my mother. I mean, I've got my flower order in over at Chester's, and I just want to do something extra this year. I don't know what it's going to be. You know what? Here's a little tip for you, Scott.
Okay.
Mothers of grown men, such as ourselves, love it when you do a craft project for them.
Wow.
That's there something there, like a card or something. That's my cop out.
All right.
So there you go, Mom. You're getting a hand turkey card. I want to paint it or something. So just the other day, you announced that you are seeking re-election.
Yes.
And for the district attorney office. And that's a tough job. That encompasses a lot of things in the county.
It has its days, that's for sure.
Especially when you have inmates that want to come in and look at all your files.
Yeah.
What happened with that?
What happened was he had filed a FOIL request with our office. Actually, he had filed numerous FOIL requests at our office before I was the district attorney, and then since I've been the district attorney, he by far files the most FOIL requests,
yeah,
more than any media outlet FOILs us. And he's always looking for something new. He's looking for something that doesn't exist, or if it did exist at some point, we can't find it.
Right.
And we've looked, and he won't take no for an answer. Then he sued us, and it was just easier to bring him down. He's only in one of the local state prisons, so it wasn't like he had to be moved very far.
Yeah, he didn't have to get on a plane. Right. or
So right. We brought him down, let him look. And
did he find anything useful to your knowledge?
No.
He didn't?
No, he didn't find what he was looking for.
Well, he got a day out of prison, I guess.
I guess.
I don't know how exciting it was for him to sit going through all the documents. But that's got to be, do you get a lot of inmates foiling you or calling you up and say, hey, I'm innocent, this is why?
More foiling us than calling up saying they're innocent and this is why. But yeah, we get FOIL requests. I wouldn't say daily, but almost daily we get FOIL requests.
Is it become a burden on the system?
Oh, it's a huge burden for our office because... with the budget crisis that we've had, I mean, we've had to lay numerous people off. Over the past few years, our office has got significantly smaller, but 10% smaller.
Yeah, and you know, Erin Gall, she was in, and she addressed that same issue that their court system's facing a lot of cutbacks.
Absolutely.
And so,
everybody is. And, you know, in a FOIL request, especially one like Baretti files, is very time consuming because, first of all, we don't have the files in our office. Mm-hmm. On most cases, so we have to request them. Somebody has to go get them from a remote location. And then one of my assistants has to look through the paperwork, and sometimes that can be an hour project. Or in Brady's case, I mean, there's six files.
And that case was about, what, 20 years old?
Is he? 30.
30, yeah. Wow.
I mean, nobody, and there's the people that do the FOILs, myself, none of us half of us were still in high school.
Yeah, I wasn't even born yet, for goodness sake.
So
and I'm sure the filing system 30 years ago wasn't up to par what it is
now. It's not what it is today,
yeah.
That's for sure. And unfortunately, where the files were originally stored when we used to be in the county courthouse got flooded at one point.
Mm. Oh, and, surprise, in the city of Utica, we got a flood. Yeah,
that's a surprise. And because of that, a lot of stuff got destroyed. And then from that location, it was moved. In my career, I know that we've moved at least 3 times. So every time everything gets moved, and we're talking about files from the 1800s, all of the files that we have get moved.
Yeah.
If something gets misplaced, and you're talking, I don't even know how many files we have, probably well over 10,000, I would guess probably closer to 20,000 files, if not more. I don't know. There's just volumes and volumes. And if something gets misplaced, the box, or it gets turned around, you can't see the name on it.
Yeah. I can only imagine. My paperwork here, look at my stuff stacked in there, there's some stack over there. And so So you're seeking re-election. Why don't you give everybody your background? Where did you start out in your law career?
Sure. I graduated from Vermont Law School, and after I graduated from law school, initially for about the first 6 months, I was in private practice in Albany. My wife was from Albany, and that's where I had studied for the bar. And I was trying to, I had applied for jobs in the district attorney's office here, Onondaga County, different places locally. I wanted to come back to upstate, or to central New York. I finally was offered a job here, and then I started in the United County District Attorney's Office in 1992, in July of 1992. And from that point, I basically worked myself up from the, you know, the lowest level assistant DA to becoming the district attorney. And I, you know, I handled Rome City Court. And then I came here. I was, for 4 years, I was assigned in Utica City Court. And then I've handled quite a few, excuse me, of the town courts and village courts that that I was assigned to throughout my career.
It's got to keep you busy. That's for sure.
It's a busy job.
Yeah. what's the hardest part of your job?
The hardest part of my job? That was easier to answer before I was the district attorney. I think the hardest part of the job is the political end of being the district attorney, because a lot of people don't understand, and I wouldn't say a lot, some people don't understand that you can't be political when you're the district attorney.
Right.
Like, I can't endorse people. I can't, you know, I'm not supposed to do any political. I can go to political events. I can donate money to people. But I, like, for example, if I'm at a fundraiser, I can't speak in favor of somebody. And I know one time we were in a parade and some people wanted us to walk with them, which would have, the district attorney's office to walk with them, and it was a political organization. And it would have been highly inappropriate. Yeah. And they got very mad at me.
Really?
Yeah, very mad. And I was trying to explain it to them, but that was falling on deaf ears. those kind of things are difficult. You know, I mean, in the job itself, obviously the hardest is when you get a phone call that somebody like Tommy Lindsay or Joe Corr has been killed, and that's, you know, that's just by far the most difficult things that you have to deal with. When, and especially with Tommy, you know, I knew Tommy.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the first people that I knew and had seen within days of that being murdered. So normally when we handle a case, we don't know the victim. So that was a, you know, that was a very tough case.
Now, how do you get involved in the trials? Because you don't handle a lot of the cases, no. Right? Like you most of your assistants handle them. What would it take for you to get personally involved in it?
Well, it's not as
I've always wondered that, because you know it's just like the sheriffs with like, you know, Rob Mitchell. It's like, well, Rob, when do you get in a patrol car? Do you ever do that, or is it more administrative and policies? You don't physically get in the courtroom. Like in a movie, it's like, the district attorney's actually handling this case.
Yeah.
It's a big one.
The TV makes more of it than there really is. I mean, I obviously could take any case that I want.
Sure.
And what I typically do is I just figure out who I believe is the most appropriate person in the office to handle a case. And that person gets assigned to it. I don't try to take a lot of cases, because if I did that, then the other part of my job would suffer. I do still take cases. To this day, I still handle Marshall Town Court, which is where I grew up and the reason I kept that court. So I handle all the cases in Marshall Town Court to this day. I periodically take cases. I mean, I think more attention's given when I take a case that has a lot of publicity.
Right.
I have taken cases that have no publicity. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. And but if I see a case that interests me, or if I see a case that that I think it's appropriate, like I took Adam Thiel, and the reason I took Adam Thiel's case was because I knew the offer was going to be plead to the maximum charge. And if I had given it to another assistant and they were to go to court and they say, we want the max, they're probably not going to get the same reception in court as if I say, you know, we're not negotiating on this. And, you know, and on top of it, it was a kind of case that I was always interested in. I'd spent a great deal of my career studying and going to seminars on baby homicides.
Yeah.
So it was a case that I found very interesting.
We're speaking with District Attorney Scott McNamara. It's 8:17, and the Adam Thiel case was the one that you most people around the area will remember that he was the guy that shot his baby.
Absolutely.
And once the police arrived, they said, you know, put down the gun or and they had to take action. Do you think that was a proper? They handled it properly, the police?
Oh, absolutely. Knowing all the facts, what actually had happened was 911 had received a telephone call, and the first telephone call was from Ethan Thiel's grandmother. It would have been the baby's mother's mother. And she had been on the phone with Adam, and Adam was threatening to kill people and threatening to hurt people. And so she called 911 because she didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And then right after she called 911, Adam's mother called 911. And Adam's mother was screaming hysterical, and you couldn't even understand her, like when you would listen to the 911 call. The 911 operator kept saying, you have to slow down. I don't know what you're saying.
Right.
And then finally she said, you need to send somebody here. He's threatening to kill us all. And at that point, obviously, people call 911 for a reason, to get help.
Absolutely.
You know, so, I mean, the people would say the cops shouldn't have shown up. What were they supposed to wait for, him to kill everybody and then show up?
You know,
You know, people call 911 to get help. And so the police were all dispatched. And then on the way, the trooper that was involved, Carlo Gennario, who I actually gave him an award for the way he conducted himself, he was en route, and while he was driving there, the 911 dispatch center got another telephone call, and this time it was from Adam's mother again. And Adam's mother said, he says he's going to kill the baby if you get there. Well, when she says that, you can actually hear him just moments before say it himself in the background.
Wow.
So the dispatcher then notified the police, and Carlo, the trooper, He literally slowed down. You can hear his car slowing down on because he had a microphone on. You can hear his car slow down, and he turns his lights off. He turns the siren off, and he actually says to himself, "Now what do I do?"
Right. Yeah, that's gotta be a terrible situation.
And what he did was it's a wooded area. He tried to sneak in. He was told. He was asking a lot of questions about the location. Mm-hmm. He was asking questions about the people involved. And he was told that Adam was behind the trailer out in the wooded area. So he tried to sneak in. He didn't even pull in the driveway. He pulled on the lawn and used the trailer as a shield to protect basically him from being seen while he and what his plan was to sneak around the trailer and to try to get a visual of what was going on until some people came. And as he pulled up and parked, at that moment, Adam walked around, walked around the trailer. And when Adam saw him, that's when Adam, the trooper didn't even get a chance to get out of the car. You can actually hear the gunshot go off as he opens his door and it starts beeping. And Adam just placed little Ethan on the end of the barrel of the shotgun, bent down, and pushed the trigger. So there was nothing that Carlo Gennario or anybody else could have done. And it was terrible.
You know, in cases like that, really hit the community hard, and it's tragic when something like that happens. And now, you got the maximum sentence for him.
Yes,
which is 25 to life. Mm-hmm. Stuff like cases like that make people want to bring the death penalty back.
Yes, they do.
And it was just a short time after the case in Whitesboro.
Right. Yeah.
And that a lot of people were upset with that sentence too.
We were. Yeah. We weren't happy in the DA's office. Unfortunately, we don't make the laws. If we made the laws, trust me, they'd be a little bit different sometimes. And that's a perfect example. Champagne, he didn't get what he, in my opinion, he didn't get what he deserved.
Yeah, I totally agree with that statement.
We tried and tried and tried to get a more harsh sentence, but ultimately, that's not how the law is right now. And, and we looked at that case more than anything. Mm-hmm. We could have easily walked away from that case right from day one, said, hey, this is a family court case. And we didn't because our own, internal, feelings were like this kid deserves to go to prison for a long time. And, in the end, it looked like if we kept pushing it, he might not go to jail at all. So we took what we could get in family court.
How do you deal with that? By the way, we're speaking with District Attorney Scott McNamara, 624-0870, 624-0870. Any questions? How do you get laws changed like that?
Well, the first thing that we do when we want a law change is we contact our local assembly person or our senator. And I have to tell you, we have fantastic people locally. You know, Roanne DeStito, who obviously is leaving, which is going to be a great loss. And Joe Griffo, fantastic. And now we have Claudia Tenney, which Claudia's newer. So, and you know, I've known Claudia for a long time because she was an attorney. So I think we're in very good hands. We've actually recently, one of my assistants, Don Loopy, had a law change that we thought was wrong, and we finally got it to this. I don't know if the governor signed it yet, but I know it's on the governor's desk, or at least it was, and it was to change the – there was kind of a flaw in the law on when – if children were molested but not sexually raped or sodomized, they the punishment for a certain age was basically equivalent of stealing a pack of cigarettes.
Really?
Yeah, so we were, it was a misdemeanor. So we went to Albany. Dawn is on the district attorney's office, or not the district attorney's office, the New York State District Attorney's Association's. There's a legislative group that gets together anytime that we see a law that we think needs to be changed. She's on that, so with the assistance of that and just her hard work and Roanne DeStito and Joe Griffo's help, we got it passed. It took a long time. I know the Senate passed it a couple times, and finally this year it did get through the Assembly, and so last I knew it was on the governor's desk.
Hopefully he gets it signed. Hopefully yeah. Roanne could kind of buy him a new pen and get it in there, because it looks like she's going to have to.
Exactly.
Scott, thanks so much for coming in. Do you have a campaign website up or anything like that yet?
Yes.
And who's going to be your opponent? Any idea?
I don't have one at this point, and I don't know.
I haven't heard anything of who's running for. Well, you got county executive. I have heard nothing who's running against Tony, and I've heard nothing of who's running against you.
Yeah, I haven't heard, and you know, obviously, that there's still a lot of time for that.
Yeah,
so.
There is a lot of time. It's crazy that candidates came out last month even and announced their intentions to run.
Right, so.
It's going to be a long political season.
Yes, it will be.
And I'm looking forward to it, that's for sure. Job security. So
website's districtattorneymcnamara.com.
Excellent. Plain and simple. I like it.
Yes.
I don't like when people put like four, because you don't know if it's the number four, if it's the word four, or what word, what spelling of four it is. And,
correct.
And they get all these crazy Z's for S's, and I don't like that. I like it. So it's McNamara 4.
No.
No. I already got it messed
district
up.
DistrictAttorneyMcNamara.com.
So if you put a 4 in there, I would have got it right.
Yeah, you get a 4. Yes.
Scott, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Mark.